Hogan, the other night, election night, my wife turned to me and she said, "Isn't it nice not to really have to be anywhere or worry about anything on election night? Doesn't happen too often, you know?"
Oh, I know. But it is great. I was thinking about the same thing with the debate the other night too, because I was thinking, when you're not on a campaign, as you and I have talked about before, debate nights are great. When you're on a campaign, they're horrible because you have to spend a lot of time prepping for it and then real time doing stuff and then afterwards spinning. And so it's just kind of interesting that, when you're sitting on the sidelines just watching, it's a whole lot more fun.
Yeah, it's like actually an entertainment thing, and you can actually pay attention to what everybody's saying. But when you're staffing and you're working, and it's debate night, and your candidate is involved, and you're doing all the press stuff and putting out statements, and you're trying to keep track of what's going on, and then watching the clock, and next thing you know, there's only 15 minutes till it ends, and you're not ready, and the whole thing, what a mess. Anyway, so there's a lot to talk about Election Day and a debate, and we have a new Speaker of the House that I want to touch on, and we'll get to all of that. It's just me and Hogan Gidley, Tim Merton, Hogan Gidley, on this edition of the Line Drive Podcast. So Election Day, a couple nights ago, depending on when folks are listening to this, no way to sugarcoat it. The Democrats did very well, just about everywhere except for your adopted home state of Mississippi, right? So,
Where they do
what do
not
you
have
make?
early voting.
Is that right? Not at all?
Yeah.
It's Election Day only?
So what do you know?
How about that? That's interesting. I did not know that. Also, the demographics of Mississippi, it's a Republican state, but so is, in many cases,
Kentucky.
Kentucky. Right. So what do you make of all this? Democrats did very well. They won, they retained the governor's office in Kentucky. Republicans held serve in Mississippi, but in Virginia, Democrats took control of the entire state legislature for the first time in a while. Ohio, abortion rights got enshrined in the state constitution, right to an abortion. So it was, for all intents and purposes, a big Democrat night. What do you think?
It was. Look, nothing's ever as bad as it seems or as good as it seems, quite frankly, when you're talking about elections. Tim, you know this, and I don't know how many of our listeners understand, and maybe they do. I'm not trying to talk down to anybody here. I'm just let me kind of try to unpack some of this. It is very difficult to win an election because a lot of things have to happen for that to occur. I hear all the time, and I'm sure you do too, because you're a messenger, right? We do press that, hey, just you guys got to message better. Okay, fine. Like Joe Biden keeps saying, I got to message better on the economy. Well, you can message it all as good as you want to, but you can't sell a bad product. Everyone's paying more for gas and for groceries and rent and mortgage payments and car payments. So it's not gonna work.
In Biden's
But
case, he's trying to polish a turd, would be the technical term for
there'd be the technical term, I think.
right.
But for me, the interesting part is what you have to do to get people out to vote at the local level takes a lot of tedious, menial tasks that a lot of people just don't want to do. Consultants come in and they do their ad campaigns and they make their money whether you win or not. But it's ballot harvesting, ballot chasing, voter registration, poll watcher training, poll worker training. It's all those things that aren't sexy, that aren't on the front pages, process stories at best. But it's people out there going word of mouth, knocking on doors, trying to get people to the polls. And then you got to worry about, is the candidate any good? Are you selling a good product? And what is that candidate facing? Where Glenn Youngkin was facing a race a couple of years ago, where his opponent basically said, parents don't have any right to know what their kids are learning in school. They don't have a say in what their kids are learning in school, the curriculum. Well, that's a gift to him, okay? When you're talking about a race like Kentucky, for example, the sitting governor is like a dynasty name in the state. I mean, his father was governor. So you can't just say, well, it's all Trump's fault, or there wasn't enough Trump, or it's all Rana's fault, it's all the RNC's fault. Well, there wasn't enough RNC. Like, you're looking for silver bullets. And what I'm trying to explain to the listeners is it's a lot of factors. Did it rain on election day in areas you needed to stay sunny, right? Was it too cold? Were your kids sick? What happened around town? What happened at your work that prevented you from going to vote? All those things. We're clearly behind on early voting, clearly. We're clearly behind on ballot harvesting, all the things that are legal in some states we don't do. And we have to get better at that as a party. And we used to be the gold standard. Go back and think about the 72-hour plan from Karl Rove, you know, with George Bush. They didn't even have text messages. If they knew you didn't vote, they went and knocked on your door and made sure you went out to vote. Mm-hmm. They made sure your ballot was turned in. I think we've gotten away from that in large measure and just say, hey, we sent out texts. We sent out the text alerts to, you know, 500,000 people. But that doesn't do text anything. Alerts.
Let me. Well, it just annoyed me. I got so now this is all part of it. You got to do it. But man, I got so many text messages and I got text messages throughout the day on election day after I had voted, which to me told me that they were not checking up to see who had already turned out because they're still hitting me with text messages with cost, which cost money. And they could have taken me off the list if they had a really thorough program, you know.
Sure.
You know, you said something there, though, that people. The punditry and people you were on NBC, right? Following following the, and we'll get to that. But the punditry class and you know the professional political people, which I guess you know we have to admit that we're sort of a part of. But they want to look for overarching national connections to all of these state races that occurred. Yeah. On Tuesday, right? Yeah, because it's easy. And of course, you see Kentucky, everybody thinks bright red state. Trump endorsed the challenger, Cameron, the attorney general.
Yep.
Really, I think a rising star in the Republican Party. And he did
and
not.
Still is.
Still is. But he did not win this race. Doesn't mean his career is over, but he did not win this one. And of course, the liberals in the media want to say, oh, that's all Trump's fault. That they did not manage to pick up the governor's office in Kentucky. Well, I mean, like the guy's a dynasty. Beshear is a dynasty. And, you know, he's an incumbent governor of a state.
Hard to
first
be.
Of all. So the fact that an incumbent governor is reelected is hardly shocking. Right. But let's take a look at this. Is it possible? Is it even possible that Trump was a drag on Republicans statewide in Kentucky? First of all, other statewide Republicans won.
All one. Yeah.
One attorney general, secretary of state, so on and so forth. Look at how Kentucky went in the presidential elections. In 2016, Trump got 62.5% of the vote in Kentucky over Hillary Clinton. 2020, he beat Joe Biden with 62.09%. So better than 62% both times. And Joe Biden did not get involved in this race, in the governor's race in Kentucky. There is zero chance that a guy who won the state twice by better than 62% was a drag on the Republican statewide ticket. A 0%. It's not possible for Donald Trump to have been a drag on it. He can only be beneficial in a state like that. So if anything, what happened in Kentucky is actually could actually be interpreted as a rejection of national Democrats and their agenda. The governor of Kentucky did not run for reelection on the agenda of House Democrats in Washington.
Correct.
Or on the Biden administration. He ran as a Kentucky Democrat, which is pretty damned conservative as compared to the National Democratic Party. So for Joe Biden and the White House to be trying to take a victory lap over what happened in Kentucky, like, brother, they did not vote for you or your agenda.
Right. And they're trying to say that's exactly what happened, of course, because they're using their spin. The media, for the most part, parrots it. But, I mean, you know, look, America First policies, the things we've been talking about now for several years, they're 80-20 issues. I mean, they're supported by 80% of the people in this country. The question becomes, if they're so popular, how come you lose elections? And like I said, because I think we've gotten really bad at the blocking and tackling, the nuts and bolts, the things that are so tedious. And, you know, look, the average state party chair lasts for 17 months. That's no time at all to prepare for multiple
how do you
cycles.
How do you know that statistic?
Because I know statistics.
You know some stuff.
I'm a policy wonk. But
that is true.
So they don't have time to learn the state in a way that drives them politically to know every little nuance. They're smart chairmen for the most part, and they have to spend a lot of time raising money to make sure they keep the lights on, the doors open, if they even have an office building in the Capitol or somewhere near it. So, you know, the know-how and knowledge, I think, isn't there on how to do a lot of this bare-knuckle brawling, not just in public, but all the stuff you have to do in private. The legal fight isn't there. And one thing we haven't touched on, Tim, not just the legal effort that is never there for us, the money. We're outspent like 10 to 1 in a lot of these states. And so that plays a huge role in the outcome of these elections. You hate to say it, but money does matter.
It does. Yeah. And in Virginia, I know Virginia Republicans were pretty wildly outspent. And, you know, all of this is going on as well against the backdrop of this New York Times poll that came out that shows Trump beating Biden in five out of six right. key battleground states. And, you know, there's, I think probably what happened in Kentucky, that the media wants to treat it like that race is a referendum on what's going to happen in 2020 or a predictor, but that race in Kentucky was not nationalized at all. It really wasn't. And if it had been nationalized, take a look at what Donald Trump is doing to Joe Biden in the national polls. If that race really right. was applicable to the national picture, then the Republican would have won, because that's what's happening in the nation right now. But I mean,
right. some people say it's too close to Trump. Some say it was too close to McConnell and they didn't like McConnell. I mean, like, there are
that
so
depends
many
on who you ask,
that,
right?
That's what I'm saying. There's so many yeah. things here that go into winning and losing these elections. And so I don't think silver bullets are the way to go. I did see a stat. I think Kellyanne Conway put it out this evening, and she made a point where something like 72-70% of Biden voters turned out, and only 50% turned out on the Republican side in Kentucky. So it was a weird enthusiasm gap of 20-some-odd percentage points. That matters, obviously. They were down mm-hmm. you know, tens of thousands in early voting. So look, these things are layered. What I do like, I'm going to kind of put my spin hat on here, Tim, is that I'm glad we're learning this even more so now as opposed to 2024. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I don't know how many dry runs you need. We have elections every year somewhere, but
yeah, but
in the lead up to another presidential election, you know, you'd rather take your lumps in this one. Where, you know, I think, although, you know, the thing is the Democrats learned some lessons from this too. The abortion measure that they had on the ballot in Ohio succeeded. You know, at the risk of doing what you said you don't like to hear at the beginning, I think we lost the message war on the abortion measure in Ohio. And I think that's going to be a consistent problem, because you don't have the media on our side. Of course, the media is going to do two things. They are going to play along with the Democrat attacks on Republicans and help Democrats distort Republican positions on this. Mm-hmm. And they will also not be honest about how extreme the Democrats' position on allowing abortion up to the moment of birth for any reason or for no reason whatsoever. That's their official position. The Democrats will yeah. do what they can to conceal that.
Sure.
So with that as the landscape, man, it's a messaging war, and it's going to cost money. And they got it to pass in Ohio, and so now it's going to be in the Constitution in Ohio. And they won, and they were successful, and they're going to take that to other states.
Yeah.
You're going to see more of these in 2024 when it's also a presidential year.
Sure, it's the same thing Karl Rove did with gay marriage for George W. Bush. He put it as a referendum on states, and they won when they did that. Look, this abortion thing, let's stick here for just a minute. We lose the messaging on that. But I would argue, as I unravel this, and we may have even talked about this before on the podcast, but you know, when we overturned Roe v. Wade, I mean, we were the dog that caught the car, didn't know what to do with it, went silent for months. Talk about your all-time misinformation, disinformation campaigns. You know, 67% of Americans believed once Roe v. Wade was overturned, that outlawed abortion. So,
hey, I'm sorry. I don't
know what that was?
That was accidental. Pay no attention to the accident.
But anyway,
I was trying to unmute myself. Right. People believe that abortion had been outlawed.
Right. So we went silent on it and allowed the left to call us all these extreme names and define our position. Now, I'm pro-life, so let me just say that. But I also understand a majority of the country is okay with bans on abortion at the 16-week mark. That's 4 months. So first of all, I would say, let's not say 16 weeks anymore. Let's say 4 months. While 16 is a bigger number than the number 4, months is a much more jarring number than weeks, because everybody has to do math with weeks.
Right. Most people will think, well, that's a good long time.
Yeah, exactly. 4 months. Right. Yeah. So that's fine. But when you're talking about a federal issue here, and they're talking about 15 or 16 weeks, the left is never going to go for that. Because as you said, Tim, this is where we also need to go on offense. The right. left position, every single Democrat in the U.S. Senate voted for a bill that allowed for abortion anywhere, anytime, for any reason, up until the moment of birth, and they wanted you to pay for it. 86% mm-hmm. of the people in this country reject that. 86%. It's not even close.
Every Make so often.
Answer for that.
Right. Every so often, someone in the corporate media, NBC or somewhere else, will ask a Democrat, okay, so where do you put your limits? Where is it okay for you for there to be any limits on abortion whatsoever? And 100% of the time, the Democrat dodges, and the reporter might ask a follow-up or two, but eventually they get let off the hook, and there's never any definition given to it. They don't want to go on the record about when they would accept any limitations because there aren't any. There are no limitations that they
right, not to them.
And correct. So you just have to keep somehow make sure they keep getting asked the question because they will look like the extremists that they are.
Yes. Yes. It's and so easier said as than candidates, done. As candidates learn how to message this, they got to go on the offense here and start slapping mm-hmm. them around a little bit. And be like, look, I'm happy to defend my position on life. You got to defend yours on death, which is pretty obvious. And once the American people see that, I think that it's going to be jarring to them in a lot of ways. But look, if a state wants to go lower, like Mississippi or Florida, like they did, okay. But if we can have a conversation about protecting the life of the child, yes, but also protecting the mother too. There are two lives here. We need to be talking about it in those terms. So you're talking about adoption options. You're talking about childcare services, things like that, that the left – they give money for the woman to have the abortion. We ought to be pushing to give money to the woman to have the child. Legislation or legal maneuvers to make sure the father, if they have the means to do it, or grab the means from them, to pay for this child. This is the type of stuff we need to make sure we do to let the American people know we get the complexity of this. Here are the options. It doesn't have to be abortion. And by the way, 90% of abortions occur in the first 15 weeks. So it's not like we're getting rid, you know, the proposal wouldn't get rid of everything, but it would curtail abortions in states like California and New York and Illinois that allow for that, pre-second of birth abortion in those states. So there's a way to talk about this and the American people will be on our side. We just can't be afraid of it because everybody, polling shows they're on our side.
Yeah, it's the problem is we are losing the battle because the conversation that candidates are having in public is not, it's inherently a dishonest conversation because as I mentioned, the actual position of the Democrats is never actually front and center and out yeah. in the open for everyone That's to right. discuss. And the Republican position is far too easily distorted and misrepresented. And so if we are losing the conversation, it's because the conversation is has been corrupted and the media is not playing fair, of course, as they will not
someone,
do.
Someone made it. And by the way, they asked us on the debate, say, what weak limit is okay with you? But as far as the left's question, it's like, how far do you think Roe v. Wade being overturned sets back women's rights? Like,
yeah.
And someone brought this to my attention. Everybody knows this, I guess, but broad generalities helps the left. Specifics hurt them. So when they say yeah. rights on abortion, okay, weeks. I can't give you weeks because then it hurts me, right? We need to take in your tired, your sick, your huddled masses. Come into this country. How dare you want to close off the border? Okay, 6 million people here illegally, or now I guess it's seven. 2 million gotaways, 200 people on the terrorist watch list. Let's talk about specifics. They don't want to have that conversation. Specifics always hurt the left.
And you can see that. You can see that in the way the media questioning is. You're exactly right. I never thought about it this way. But the way they ask Republicans about abortion is that they want to know, how are you going to do this? What is your legislation going to do? A, B, yeah. C, and D. How many weeks? At what time of day is this going to be printed? So on and so forth.
Right.
And when they ask it about to Democrats, it's a very philosophical question.
Yeah.
You know, sure. Tell me your views about abortion generally.
Yeah.
Which is really easy to answer and really easy to get away with fudging things. And that's what they continue to do.
Yeah.
So there's less than a year now until Election Day 2024. So there's time, but not a lot.
Not a lot.
So let's go. So you went down to Florida to be mm-hmm. A talking head. regarding the what is it, the third, was it the third Republican primary debate?
Republican debate, yep.
I'm sorry to say that had the smallest audience of the three. Yeah. So there weren't that many people watching you do your reaction there.
That's it. That's because they didn't promote me enough in the promos. Had they promoted me, obviously there would have been a bigger
audience. Would have been a huge number. Yeah, huge number. Some 6.8 million or something like that, which is down from 8, which was down from 13 on the first time. So what was your take? Having watched it and having expressed it on NBC, tell us now, what did you think?
Yeah, like all debates, there are some good moments, some bad moments, some cringe moments, some confusing moments. Again, these things are all about creating a moment that's lasting and memorable that you can turn into momentum and then ultimately a movement. It's tough to create a moment that makes you rise above the rest when the person you're trying to catch is nowhere to be, not in the room. He's 10 miles away getting an endorsement from Governor Sanders from Arkansas, of course, Sarah Sanders. It's hard to do that. There's no more, he's not even in the room and there's still no oxygen in it. But look, I was on another show tonight where we were talking about how most of these candidates have similar positions. Yeah, they should. They're Republicans for the most part. I mean, they should. All the Democrats have similar positions. There's nothing weird about that. So it does kind of become a charisma contest, a likability contest. You know, and what's so funny is you get these entrenched people who think Nikki is the only way to go because we need a woman. You think, oh, Ron DeSantis is the only way to go because he governed in Florida, right? Vivek, he's new. We got to have someone new. And everyone's like, everyone should just get out and coalesce behind one candidate. Well, first of all, a lot of those votes would go to Trump. But second of all, it's like, no, because the people who hold those opinions of those candidates, they think their candidate is going to be the one to rise to the top. They think their candidate has every right to be there, and they do. So they're going to keep supporting that candidate. You can't tell someone, you know, until they learn on their own that candidate isn't going to make it or that's not the right candidate, you know? So we're going to see this, I think, for the foreseeable future. I don't know how many people are going to be in Tuscaloosa for that next debate.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. But, people don't want to be told. There's a lot of – everybody talks about electability. You know, Ron DeSantis tried this at the very beginning of this. You know, I'm the electable one. I'm like Trump without the baggage. But, you know, I'm finding, as I deal with campaigns and candidates and I see polling and stuff, our people don't want to hear in a primary setting – they don't want to hear the argument that so-and-so is electable because when they hear that, they hear somebody crapping on their own preferred candidate. You know what I mean? And they take it personally. They're like, oh, you're saying your guy's electable? What's wrong with my guy?
Oh, yeah, only you? Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes them dig in. But here's what? Go ahead.
Just one funny line. I was laughing because I thought Nikki did fine. I thought Ron did fine. I thought Vivek did fine. But Nikki had a line that kind of made me chuckle because it was a selling point to her. Like in her, it's funny what candidates think are selling points. Like you said, like I'm the electable one. But Nikki said, we're debt deficit, blah, blah, blah. And then she goes, which is a serious problem. Don't get me wrong. And then she goes, well, I'm an accountant. Maybe we need an accountant in office. And I was thinking, put that on the bumper sticker.
Yeah. Boy,
we need an accountant in office. Yes.
Haven't you seen the people?
The nation.
Whew.
Accountants.
The people have been out demonstrating in the streets.
calling for accountants.
Yeah. So here, all right. So here was a big moment here. Speaking of Vivek Ramaswamy from last night.
Think about who's moderating this debate. This should be Tucker Carlson, Joe Rogan, and Elon Musk. We'd have 10 times the viewership asking questions that GOP primary voters actually care about and bringing more people into our party. You think the Democrats, and we've got Kristen Welker here, you think the Democrats would actually hire Greg Gutfeld to host a Democratic debate? They wouldn't do it. And so the fact of the matter is, I mean, Kristen, I'm going to use this time because this is actually about you in the media and the corrupt media establishment. Ask you the Trump-Russia collusion hoax that you pushed on this network for years. Was that real or was that Hillary Clinton made up disinformation? Answer the question. Go.
Mr. Ross.
Sorry. This is how we get our country back.
So that one was met with quite a lot of favor with the crowd, of course. And look, we both know. I know Kristen Welker, and I'm sure
me too.
I imagine you do too.
Talked to her like 2 weeks ago. Yeah,
I like her a lot. She's very personable. She's a professional. I've had very good dealings with her. But Vivek's point is well taken. I mean, I get it. Honestly, let's just say that she does not have liberal bias. I believe she does, but not as bad as some. But let's just say she didn't. Even so, I'm not sure it's the best idea. Why do we have to keep farming out the selection of our Republican candidates to the corporate mainstream media? Why can't we keep it to the conservative media? Why can't we be involved in totality in the process that selects our candidate? You know what I mean? I have sympathy for his point of view. I do.
I do too. I remember when Juan Williams in South Carolina famously asked Newt Gingrich about, there were all kinds of rumors about him with, I don't know if it was affairs or threesomes or something like that. And he said, do you want to answer that question? And Newt Gingrich says, no, but I will. And the crowd went ballistic and he went off on the media. I was like, he should have given, and he spiked in the polls after that. I think he was in first place, at least briefly, or at least second.
A little while. Yeah, I remember that.
He should have given Juan Williams like a fruit basket or something. I remember because I was, ED of the party.
Yeah.
I think maybe that wasn't it. Maybe this was
in South Carolina.
South Carolina was that debate. But anyway, maybe I was with Santorum then. I can't remember. But anyway, that's not the point. It's always popular with our side to go after the media because we know what the media does to us, right? 93% of the news coverage on Donald Trump was negative by all available data and metrics. They go after us all the time. They don't hold us to the same standard, or they don't hold the left to the same standard as they do us. They give them passes. They don't ask serious questions. I mean, Steven Crowder, Louder with Crowder, which I've listened to. He's entertaining, very popular on the internet. He's the one who got the manifesto from the transgender Nashville shooter.
Yeah.
Congratulations. And I thought to myself, wow, good get for him. And then someone brought this to my attention. I thought, how come I didn't think of this? Why wasn't it the New York Times? Why wasn't it the Washington Post who got that? It was some rogue guy on the internet.
Well, I'll tell you why. You know why. Because they're just like Philip Bump. They don't care.
I know that. I'm just pointing it out that why are they the ones that have to find this out, right? So I get that part of it. I also get the other side of this, which is, because I was in that building with Donald Trump for a long time. You don't get nice questions in that building, and you can't just call on Fox. Right. You can't just call on Newsmax. Right. You have to call on other people. And those other people are mean and they're nasty. You got a few Jim Acostas in there who make a living on going after the right. So I get the thought process of, hey, if you can't take a question from Lester Holt, how are you going to deal with Xi Jinping? I understand that. It's not a bad argument. But I also get your side, which is I think you said before we came on, you're giving them opposition research. You're giving them ads to cut to the other side.
Right.
Because of the way they phrase the questions and because of the bias there. But, I get
this
it.
This one wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad. It wasn't.
No, it wasn't. So, but you're giving them the opportunity. Like, I remember when John Harwood, of all people, was allowed to moderate a Republican primary debate. And, they asked the questions that everything is framed from the perspective of the left. And they try to put our candidates one at a time or as a group out on limbs and put them in places where they believe it's politically uncomfortable for Republicans. That's what the moderators view as their job. And all they're doing is providing an opposition research service for the eventual Democrat opponent once the primary is over with. And so I just sort of have a basic objection to letting the opposition media, which is what they are, the opposition media play such an outsized role in our own selection process.
I understand that you
sort of have to learn how to take the tough questions.
I'll tell you Vivek's best point there, which I thought was really good. The Democrats would never let Greg Gutfeld or Tucker Carlson.
Oh, sure. Or Hannity or somebody like that.
Hannity or anybody. No, they wouldn't. Now, of course, NBC's argument is, Welker and Lester are news people.
All right, so let's think. Who's on Fox? Who on Fox would be regarded as the straightest shooter?
Brett Baer.
Would they, in a million years, would they ever let Brett Baer be involved in a Democrat primary debate? Never.
Probably not.
No.
Probably not.
I don't believe you'll ever see
that. But here's the thing. It's not an equivalent to me to say Brett Baer, Kristen Welker, and Lester Holt, right? It would be more of, because I don't think Lester Holt and Kristen Welker, while they are in the news division, their bias, I think, is still obvious. I would argue Brett's is a little less obvious.
I would argue that, yeah.
I just think so. So I'm saying, you see my point, I wouldn't say that's apples to apples per se in this one.
Right. He's more down the middle than they are.
Yeah. So like you'd have to find somebody else that didn't like Hannity.
Well, I don't know. He's you know, I mean, nobody's going to let an obvious opinion person.
Yes.
But, you know, I don't know.
I get your point. I get both sides.
I get it. I don't know. Just something about it. Like it should be like, that's why I like closed primaries. I like states where you register to vote by party and only Republicans can vote in a Republican primary, and same thing on the Democrat side. In Virginia, you don't register by party. You have open primaries. Anybody can vote in your primary. You're not picking your own candidate. You're letting the other side get involved in your selection process. Right. I just object to that on a basic level. So here, there was another further exchange in the debate. Again, it involved Vivek and Nikki Haley this time. And as you remember, in the last one, they got into it a little bit. And here, I have never, you got to listen to this one all the way to the end. I'm sure you know which one this is.
Yep.
I have never seen anything quite like this on a debate stage. I've seen there's some weird stuff happened during debates, but this one is a little bit different from anything.
Well, I want to laugh at why Nikki Haley didn't answer your question, which is about looking at families in the eye. In the last debate, she made fun of me for actually joining TikTok while her own daughter was actually using the app for a long time. So you might want to take care of your family first.
Leave my daughter out of your voice. Your
adult daughter. The next generation of Americans are using it. And that's actually the point. You have her supporters propping her up. That's fine. Here's the truth.
You're just
the easy answer is
actually... Right at the end there, you're just scum, she said to him. And the look on her face, boy, oh boy, oh boy, she was not pleased. You ever see anything like that?
I mean, I don't know. Everybody was kind of, but she said, Carl, I get dumber for hearing you last time. I mean, a lot of people say.
That was so pretty bad too.
It's just so interesting because half of the people I talked to was like, Nikki just crushed him. The other half are like, she's so shrill. And I don't like the way he got under her skin and she.
I don't think that was shrill. She was like.
Not that. She was disgusted by that. I will say the point Vivek was trying to make, he made inartfully, which had he said this, look, Nikki, you talk about being a new generation candidate all the time, but new generations, younger generations are on TikTok. I got on TikTok so I could reach younger voters. Your daughter's on TikTok, for heaven's sake. She knows she's impacting the conversation by joining an app that X amount of billions of people are on. If he'd have said that, that's one thing.
Yeah, but instead he implied
she's an adult daughter, which he tried to cover and say the second time he made the charge, he dropped in the word adult. It would have come across way differently than had he said it the way he did say it, which didn't work.
No, and it didn't. It also, the way he did it, it didn't support his point. He was trying, the way he said it, it made it sound like that he thought that her daughter was a bad actor, that she shouldn't be on TikTok, that no one really should be on TikTok, and she doesn't have control of her own daughter who is on TikTok. But in fact, who is an adult? But in fact, Vivek Ramaswamy meant to be defending the fact that he's communicating with people because TikTok is where the people are.
That's what I mean.
It was not effective. But man, just the way she said it and the look on her face when she said, "You're just scum." I mean, she's just had it with the guy.
I talked to people in both camps, and I got to tell you, I'm not telling you anything you don't know here, but my goodness, they do not like each other.
Yeah,
she is convinced. Yeah, she thinks she is an inexperienced glory hound, you know, opportunist. He thinks she is a neocon, same old, also opportunist glory hound, who you know, is hypocritical. I mean, it is interesting to watch those two, you know, people go after each other. It's just whatever.
I'll tell you, there is watching Vivek Ramaswamy is exhausting. There's no chill in the guy.
No, it's always,
he is 100 miles an hour all the time.
One person I wanted to bring up to you. So Chris Christie.
Okay. Yeah, what was he even doing there?
So
I know
he's
qualified.
He's got this calm, like, look, guys, let's not be petty. Let's not bicker with each other, right? Like, I was thinking to myself, that's your brand.
Yeah.
Like, you made yourself popular by being that brash, bare-knuckle brawler, and you relished in it. Now you're like, look, guys, let's all calm down.
He was
down.
The first one to really, like... engage in verbal fisticuffs at town hall meetings and stuff.
Sure.
Like the best thing that ever happened to him was the day when somebody would stand up at the back of a town hall meeting and try to get in his grill from, you know, 50 feet away, and he would shout the guy down and put him in his place and do a little fit. That was what made Chris Christie famous.
Yes.
And now he's saying, everybody, gosh,
it's all calm down. I was like, no. I want to see the old Chris Christie. This new one, I don't care for. It's also hard, I think, to, you know, there are windows, you know, like a window when you're coming back on the Earth's atmosphere. Like if you miss it, you go all the way back around the Earth. Mm-hmm. It's like, you got a window to run here. And Chris Christie clearly missed his best opportunity years ago. But it's weird also to now run for president and say, in New Jersey, we did this in 2007, right? Like,
right.
You're pushing a long time. Policy, and Nikki's the same way. You're pushing something you did in South Carolina as like a chit. And it's like, wait a minute. How long ago was that? And you're talking about a new generation of politicians.
Right. The guy who
wait, what?
The guy who replaced him as governor of New Jersey is now term limited. That's how long ago it was.
Yes.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. So you got to tout your record. Don't get me wrong. They have good records in a lot of ways. It's just like, it seems so, it's kind of weird to me, right?
Yeah. It's not.
What are you doing right now? Let's fight right now. And you're like, hey, in South Carolina 20 years ago, I was all over this. And you're like, wait, what?
Right. Like, Chris Christie was a better candidate for president. You're right. Sometime at least a decade ago. He is not
good
politically and ideologically. He is just nowhere near where the center of gravity in the Republican Party is in 2023, headed into 2024. Nowhere, he's nowhere close to it.
True.
He's far left of where the center of the party is too.
It's true.
I believe. So, I mean, was there any result? Did this debate have any impact on the race whatsoever? I think
the debate was more substantive than the others. So people got a real listen or glimpse into how they would be as a president. But I don't know. It just still seems the champ's not there, you know?
No, that's right.
So these are all undercards, and it's watching people duke it out to see who can finish second. I don't mean that. Look, they're running good races in a lot of ways. DeSantis has a big operation in Iowa. He's putting all of it there. If he finishes third in Iowa, do we agree he's done?
I mean, I think the race is basically over unless something existential happens to Trump.
Right, but what I'm saying, and that could happen, but I'm saying like the DeSantis folks are so in that if he finished third behind Nikki in Iowa, I think it would be
does he actually continue to function as a campaign? Does it even move forward?
Yeah, well, I'm
regardless
saying
of whether the outcome
he won't
may
win
be
New
determined.
He won't win New Hampshire and he won't win South Carolina. You're 0-3 and you were the man, right?
Well, so, look, if there's still money left, what's the argument for him getting out? I don't know.
Oh, I don't. No, I'm not saying he should. I'm just like, the narrative will be, here was the guy and he lost. Now, if he finishes second in Iowa or close to Trump, we're having a different conversation. If he finishes third behind Nikki, I think it's a real problem because now the stories are being written that he's putting everything in Iowa. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then you're in trouble. It's like Pawlenty.
Yeah. Just
fell off the map.
Right. And when you get to the point where you're putting all of your chips on one square and that square is Iowa, you better nail it in Iowa. Yeah. Right. Because then that's the only way you can move on with a credible story to say, look what I just did. You got to outperform expectations. Yep. Right.
That's
really basically
Santorum,
it. So Bruce. the question is what are the expectations for DeSantis? What does he have to outperform? What do you think?
Well, again, I think you got to finish a strong second. You got to be ahead of Nikki by a big amount. In Iowa, I think you got to be closer to Trump than 40 points. If nothing really changes and he gets the governor's endorsement, Kim Reynolds, and that carries some weight in Iowa. Okay.
That's a big endorsement. It's the biggest one yet. To the extent that endorsements mean anything, that's the biggest one yet.
Well, Iowa, it matters. And Iowa, look, they appreciate work. And he's already been to like 88 counties. So if he does all 99, I think he's supposed to. They care about that. And look, I've worked for candidates who did that. So I know they appreciate it. But, you know, I don't know. Like you said, unless there's some external force against Trump and this Letitia James thing or this Cobb County thing, I just don't see anything changing.
No, I don't either. But again, I've had people ask me, why do they even go through with the debates? You know, if the primary is just about over, why not save resources and get behind the guy who's obviously going to be the nominee? Yeah. And I see an argument for that. However, not a single vote has been cast. The Iowa caucuses haven't happened yet. As a party, there is a process by which the nominee is selected, and that's what's happening here. And so I don't think there is yet a good argument. Yes, Trump has a gigantic lead.
Sure.
But the process still should.
I agree. Let it play out. That.
So I wanted to get some other stuff regarding our new speaker, because I think the media has been exceedingly unfair to him. So I'll just touch on it briefly, but we're running over a little bit of time.
Okay.
So in his financial disclosure forms that he's been filing since he became a member of Congress, he got elected in 2016, I think. He doesn't have any accounts or any assets that meet the filing thresholds. And I got this from the speaker's office. He does have a bank account, but it is not interest bearing, which means that he doesn't have to include it on these forms. So the media went bonkers because all of the financial disclosures that Speaker Mike Johnson has filed over his career in Congress demonstrate that he is not, in fact, a millionaire. And they just don't know what to do with themselves. He's got to be crooked because he's not rich. Is that their argument?
Yeah.
I mean, they were going to hate anybody, no matter who it was, right? It's just a matter of figuring out why after the fact.
Yeah. Again, his biggest problem, as I see it, is that he likes LSU. That's his biggest problem. He's an LSU fan. Other than that, they're going after him in so many ways now. Did you see that story about the accountability thing he had with his son?
Yeah.
On like the way they wrote it was that they both watch porn. They just had to monitor each other's intake, which is not the story. It was an app that basically allows them to hold each other accountable, which in Christian evangelical circles, accountability partners are a thing. You just want to make sure, you know, you guys are holding each other accountable to things. And this app apparently shares data that if you watch something or do something untoward on your phone, it will ping your accountability partner. And they made it sound like he and his son watched. I mean, it's just incredible to fall all over themselves going after somebody that they just don't like this.
The point of that whole thing is to try to prevent the teenage son and just make sure that everybody in the family is using the internet safely.
Yes.
And people aren't watching harmful pornography. What? Yes. Who could possibly be against that? You know,
Democrats
and lefties in the media. There was a columnist at the Los Angeles Times, a woman named Robin Abkarian.
I know her.
Do you know her? She said that she found it, quote, kind of weird that he and his son were trying to avoid watching pornography.
Yeah, I mean,
that's weird. It's weird to not.
It's weird to not watch it. Right. It's weird. It's like.
That is not desirable to keep your teenage son away from harmful elements
Every study shows how horrible it is, how much it ruins your life, et cetera, et cetera.
It really is remarkable, these people. So anyway, I would say when you've generated that kind of animosity in your early days as speaker, not only have they picked the right guy, but he must be doing a pretty good job right out of the gate.
Understand, though, you know, the political reality that exists. It could be Jim Jordan. It could be Marjorie Taylor Greene. It can be, you know, McCarthy. It can be Johnson. But they don't have the Senate and they don't have the White House. So it's going to be hard for them to maneuver ways to get some things done. But I do think putting the Democrats in a position to answer for their positions is important. And Speaker Johnson has done a good job with that, especially with this funding bill for Israel. And I like watching the Democrats kind of flounder around there when you try to put forth a clean piece of legislation and they don't want to do it. I'm interested to see where this goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I am too. And I think his speakership is off to a strong start and he's made the right enemies. And so that's all good with me.
Yeah.
Hogan, I really appreciate your time. This has been a good one. It's actually good. Just having just the two of us. We get more
a lot of fun. We miss Sunny.
No offense to Sunny. God bless her. Yeah. She's helping her mother, and our pal Kalen wasn't available either. So that's how we rank. But anyway, we appreciate your time. Jay Hogan Gidley, I'm Tim Murtaugh, and this has been the Line Drive Podcast.